Hello, welcome to episode 2 of the Ha Ha War podcast with me, Tim Combley. I hope you enjoyed episode 1. If you haven't listened to it, please go back and listen to it. It's got the first part of the Danny Field interview. We're going to be listening to the second part in this episode. It's been really fun launching this podcast. It's been a great learning experience for me. Trial and error at points. I was about half an hour after launching the podcast that I was informed that on the Facebook page I had left the C out of the word podcast. Very embarrassing. I've made this page a few weeks ago, in fact, or maybe like a couple of weeks ago. So I've been looking at it for the last couple of weeks. Never dawned on me that I'd spelt the word podcast wrong. So, hey, what can you do? I've tried to actually change it, but it's really difficult to change the name of a page on Facebook. Something else I have learned. You'd think, you know, it being my page, I'd be able to change it quite easily, but apparently not. Once you've made the page, it's very difficult to change it. You have to submit a request to Facebook, and you can't really do anything to hurry it along, and there's no one to call. Hey, I've got to live with that mistake. What can I do? Yeah, it was at a gig, actually, that I was doing last night. I'd just finished my set, so I was sitting down to relax, watch the other acts, and then my girlfriend showed me a message that she had received from her sister saying, does Tim realise he's left the C out of podcast? Great. Wasn't a great start, but what can you do? It's all good fun. DIY podcasting, everyone. Good fun. Sometimes it's a bit crap. Enough from me. We're going to go straight into part 2 of the Danny Field episode. Really hope you enjoyed part 1. Let's continue with the great chat. Thanks for listening. Okay, so can you tell me about a favourite gig you've done in Auckland?
It would be the Classic. Whenever, yeah. I've done the Classic, it's because the other gigs are good, but they're always in a pub. So you're not sure what you're going to get, and some people are just out for like a meal or a drink. They don't really want to be disturbed by you doing comedy. Sometimes people come out. I've had one where I done Tabac on a Tuesday and the bar was pretty full. There was loads of couples in there. They all found it on Event Finder, so like that made the night better. And then there were a couple of times following that where like there was someone heckling all night, so it was difficult just to get like a good atmosphere going. And then someone got kicked out or chased out of the club because they racially abused some of the comedians.
I remember it. That's where we first met, and that guy was a dick, and he completely ruined my set.
Yeah,
I was trying to vibe a bit with him, and it worked to begin with, but then he just put me off too much.
You spent like, I mean, if you have a 6-minute set, you definitely spent like 3 minutes just like not being able to stop arguing with him,
yeah.
Because he kept going backwards and forwards.
Just for the record, I did try and vibe with him before he brought the racism out.
He hadn't done that.
Well, it was when he brought the racism out, that's when he got chased down the road by all the comedians. So, yeah, it was quite a sight coming out at the interval to see him and his mate running as fast as they can down the road, followed by, I think it was like 2 or 3 of the comedians. So, it was, comedians fighting back.
That's good for New Zealand comedy, at least, that like they're getting kicked out, because I'm sure at some point somewhere someone can make comments like that and they'd be welcomed back in. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I mean that kind of behavior doesn't really go well on the open mic comedy scene.
No, but yeah, definitely the Classic. It's just because it's an actual comedy club, and especially when I go back to London and I start trying open mic out there and see if I can work my way up. Like, the chances of playing in a venue like that without getting paid for is, like, pretty minuscule.
Yeah, I mean, I only did a couple of months over the summer in London. I think I did the main sort of, open mic nights. I did all of them. Inevitably, there'd be ones that I didn't do, but I did a lot of them. And yet, you know, there's nothing really like the Classic. I guess maybe the only one potentially that's easy to get on is Downstairs at the King's Head, which is quite an iconic iconic comedy venue, and a lot of, you know, pros go and do, you know, work in progress is there.
Yeah.
I was supposed to perform there, but I got there and there wasn't enough audience members, so they pulled the plug and I'd gone all the way into London from Buckinghamshire. And they pulled the plug, and it's something that I'd never seen happen before. It's something they'd never do in Sydney, something they'd never do in Auckland, is pull the plug because there wasn't enough audience members, and it really pissed me off.
Yeah, fucking, that's a while ago. Like, we've definitely done gigs over here where it's literally just you and the comedians, but unless it's renting space,
I'm not sure, because that was a last minute pull out. But definitely it isn't anywhere near as big as the Classic. Yeah. And, you know, I think about 11 people showed up and there needed to be 12 people for the gig to go ahead. So even if there was 12 or 13 people there, you know, it wouldn't have been the same sort of atmosphere as the Classic. As, I mean, the two times I've done the Classic, there's been, yeah, at least 30, 40 people there.
Yeah, like, and it's just a different level of confidence at the Classic. Like, you only... On the Monday night, it's, you know, 10 comedians, six minute sets. But having done it a couple of times there, like, obviously they wouldn't ask, but if the opportunity arose, like, you could quite easily go, or at least I could quite easily write up something and do 15, 20 minutes and not feel like I'm struggling on stage.
Mm.
Whereas if you asked me to do 15 or 20 minutes in a bar, I'd probably get like 7 minutes in and then I'd realise I've got to do however many left in this bar, and then that's when like your voice starts crackling and things like that, and you've got to try and work the crowd a bit, but you don't know how.
Yeah.
Like, the good thing about the Classic is if they like your jokes, then you're guaranteed pretty much to get a good laugh from a joke.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas there are times where you do it in a bar, if someone likes your joke, you're not guaranteed that it might just be one person like belly laughing and then other people just sort of staring at you blankly.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes down to who you're in front of. And as you mentioned before, some of the bars you do, people in the audience won't realise it was comedy there tonight. So they've gone for a drink, gone to meet their friends, maybe gone for a date or something. So they're not in comedy mode. At least when you're at the Classic, there's no like... misconception there.
Yeah.
Everyone who has gone through those doors know they're going into a comedy venue.
Yeah.
They're not just going for a drink with their pal.
It's just a fiver to get in, so it's almost you know, it's like a contract they pay. You know, they get your ticket, you go in, you're going to sit down, you're going to watch it. I've only seen a couple of heckles there, and I think that's pretty good for comedy. I've watched comedy there for the past 7-8 months, and I've only seen two people heckle. I've seen a third person heckle, and that was because the comedian went on stage and said he's not been heckled enough in New Zealand. Can someone heckle him?
That is just asking for trouble. Who was that?
It was during the comedy festival. I saw, I can't remember his name. He's from a place called Gaul in Yorkshire. And I can't remember his name. I think it might be Ian something.
Okay.
But yeah, he was just saying like how he'd heard the audiences were quite quiet or like didn't jump in, and they don't really like being spoken to as much. And then he got someone to heckle him, and they heckled, but he started taking a piss because the heckle wasn't that good. And so the person sweared at him, and he took the piss again by hiding behind the curtain, just like pretending to be like really upset over it. But that was like, that's the closest to like proper heckling, and the comedian was just like enjoying it.
It makes me almost think that he wanted to be heckled.
Yeah, literally, because they wouldn't have done it if he hadn't have asked.
Yeah,
which is a good thing, but I think it's also a bad thing, because if you were to do it out here and you don't get heckled as much, and then maybe you go to somewhere in like Sydney or Melbourne, or if you go back to the UK like I will, and you go to London, and then you find out that like people aren't as nice as that in comedy gigs. Like out here, because there's such a small sort of circuit, like people that want to go to watch comedy are more likely just to watch the comedy. They don't want to get involved.
Mm.
But because it's so widespread in the UK that like anyone can go and just take the piss.
Yeah. It's something I didn't really see. I mean, again, I only did maybe like 13 or 14 gigs in the UK, but similar scene in the way that there, you know, the typical open mic crowd did tend to be very supportive.
Yeah.
The only times I saw heckles were at gong shows, and gong shows is something that, to my knowledge, you don't get over here. But that was like brutal, where the heckling is encouraged. I have heard, depending on where you're performing in London, I think around like the city, you get a lot of city boys pissed up on a Thursday night, and they're a lot more likely to cause you grief. But you know, on the whole, I wouldn't say like London's in any way not a ruder audience or something like that.
I just definitely have it down as you could probably find. I mean, I haven't done it now. I'm just going off of what I would expect or anticipate. But I definitely, like, knowing I grew up in London, I've no doubt that someone could put a comedy show on and half the crowd wouldn't care, just because, like, you turn up somewhere and that's that.
Yeah, I think one of the best heckle destroys I saw was actually a comedy gig a friend of mine had put on in East London, in Mile End. And it was a charity night for MenCap, I think it might have been, some mental health charity. And all night these people had been heckling the comedians and they were being dicks, and the headliner came on and he was getting heckled. And it was extremely daring, but it worked so well because he was like, we've got this charity night for MenCap and it's really good to see that some of the beneficiaries have turned up.
Yeah.
And the crowd, like, I mean, taking a piss out of mental illness at a charity event for mental illness is ballsy at the best of times, but I think the audience was so ready to like put these hecklers down, it worked well.
Yeah.
But it can happen anywhere. That's the one of the risks with stand-up comedy, is that you as a performer have absolutely no control over who's coming in.
It's not really happened to me, like actual heckling. There was someone that was a bit of a twat at the bar when I'd done it once, and that was about it. But I do look forward to being heckled, just because it would just make you a better comedian, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if you can deal with it well.
Yeah, well, because you're going to have to, like, no matter what. Like, if you want to, I suppose, like, if you, depending on how far you want to go with stand up, like, you're going to have to be able to deal with, say, an extreme, an entire bar or room just fucking giving you shit, and then you've got to try and get them on side, or at least make one person think he was pretty funny even though everyone else thought he was shit. But
well, man, when you go to London, you'll be doing the gong shows over there and they are terrifying. There's two main ones up the, and that's a really good opportunity to perform at awesome venues. It's just a shame that it has to be in such a hostile environment. There's one so a gong show, for anyone listening who doesn't know, basically the comedian has to get up and try and last as long as possible, up to 5 minutes, and then once they've got the 5 minutes, they've beaten the gong, and they're successful and they've won, essentially. In that time, three audience members have a card each. And if they don't like the comedian, they hold up the card. Once all three have gone up, then you get gonged off and the lights go out, and it's terribly embarrassing. And even people who don't have the card are shouting, card, card, card,
yeah,
and people heckling so bad. The one I did at Up the Creek, I actually got through, and I completed the 5 minutes with no heckles, apart from when I did the London terrorism joke. Well, no, it's not a London terrorism joke, but when I did the joke about terrorism, one person shouted card. Apart from that, I got through. Then I did it at the Comedy Store, and I got up on stage, and the first thing I hear is someone from the crowd shouting, fuck off.
Yeah.
And it's like, I haven't even opened my mouth. And it was hostile as fuck. People were just getting, like, booed and shouted at, and I lasted, I think, 2 or 3 minutes on that one. But man, do a gong show, because you really find out what
fun.
You're made of.
That'd be like a good adrenaline rush, at least.
Oh, it is.
Like, you might come off and just like completely flop, but it's things like that that, I don't know, you character building.
Yeah, definitely. Very character building. And it's also good because it's a bit of a break from the usual open mics. I don't know if it's something that you struggle with, but something I sometimes struggle with is when you're in a certain scene, even if it's London or Sydney or Auckland, the place that I've performed, it's like when you go back to the same bar that you've done 10 times before and you don't have any new material, so you're just going to do your standard 5 or 6 minutes and it's like, it's not going to be anything new here. It can get a bit repetitive, where there's at least when you have these special events like gong shows,
yeah,
you know, you're not going into something that you've never done, that you've done 100 times before.
There's not a variety of things in Auckland, I guess, like that. I did go through a stage where my 6 minutes were going really well, but I think because I was only just starting out, I looked really nervous, and I think that gave the crowd an energy that like puts everyone a bit on knife edge. Like if you see someone come out on stage to do public speaking and they look nervous, you're like, are they going to do well? Are they going to shit themselves? Like, are they going to try and speak into the mic and nothing comes out?
Yeah.
So you get a bit more attention. But like once I got into it, I started noticing that I'll go through jokes that got some decent laughs in another bar or the same time I've done it before. But now no one's really laughing because I'm a lot more confident in saying it. Because I know like, all right, if no one laughs, I know what the next joke is. And if no one laughs then, I know what the next joke is. And then you get to that to the end. And if no one laughs, you just go. But I think that becomes like a performance issue where you've got to learn how to try and, like, you've got these 6 minutes, you've got these jokes, you know they do get laughs within, say, certain places. And then you've just got to try and make it work if the night's a bit quiet.
So say when you're going up, and this happens to every single comedian, you're going, you start off your set and you just know it's going to be one of those nights. You know it's going to be quiet.
From the first joke.
That's it. What's going through your mind at that point? And how do you deal with it?
If I don't get anything from the... Again, I'm only like 5 months in, so it's all a learning curve at the moment. But initially, like if I'd never got anything from the first joke, I would sort of get into like brace mode, where you just try and just make sure you remember your words, remember the lines. And I know at some point people are going to laugh, but if I don't get a laugh on the first joke, I generally know I'm probably not going to get a decent laugh until midway through. So it could just be 2 or 3 minutes of just telling jokes that gets a giggle, but not much more. And then it's once like... Yeah, once I get midway through, that's when I know a joke's going to land. But you can get to a point where, because you know you might have one joke in the middle that does well, you just try and skip through the first. So you don't put much into it. You just say everything and you go along. And you know no one's laughing, so you don't try and make them laugh. And like that's like the performance issue, where you've got to then learn to go, right, like, I don't know, it might be a quiet night or there might not be many people in, so maybe you want to try and make it like more
personal.
Or like intimate with people. But yeah, it's just like working that out. I've not worked that out yet. I've definitely not worked that out yet, but
it's a really tricky one, and it's something that I certainly haven't worked out. I mean, in the past I've kind of attempted to be a bit more interactive. I've invited questions from the crowd, and sometimes that's worked well, but other times it hasn't so much. It is really tricky because you do get into these situations where you just know that anything I say tonight is pretty much not going to get more than like a bit of a giggle.
Yeah.
And that's the most frustrating part.
It almost turns, at that point it can almost turn into like a job with no pay, where like you know you've got to go up and do it. And so like, I don't know, say you have got a job and whatever you're doing, you don't enjoy what you're doing and you just have to go through the motions. It's literally like doing 6 minutes of that, but no one's going to pay you for it. And at the end of it you go, well, like, what's the point in just going through the motions when you're spending your free time in an evening doing something?
Yeah, I do find sometimes, though, it's in those moments that it creates a almost sense of camaraderie between comedians, because more often than not, if it's a dead night, it will be for everyone, and
yeah,
everyone bombs. And there is that bits of, you know, you talk to comedians after the gig and you can kind of share that and share your frustrations with them, and you can see other people bombing, so it's not too bad. I mean, I think it happened once to me. I'm sure it's happened more than once. But
what, bombing?
Well, like, actually bombing on a night where other people have done well. And because you can always shrug it off when you bomb. Oh, no, I've bombed, like, so many times,
yeah.
For sure. But there's one moment, and it was at Tudor in Sydney, which
that can
which
be a
you've
very,
been to.
Like, if no one, if a lot of people aren't there, that can be a very difficult room.
Mm. But there was one time that stands out where I bombed, I didn't do too well, and other performers were getting laughs, and that's the real frustrating point, when you're like, whoa, what was it that I didn't do that they were able to do? And that's when you really start questioning yourself.
Yeah, well, I've had that a couple of times here, and that's, again, they're like the bar sort of gigs. I've done like two on a Sunday at the George, and because it's a Sunday, I'm only used to doing stand-up like Monday to Friday, so almost like you finish work and you sort of build yourself up to go and do something. But on a Sunday, you don't base your day around like the sort of hour or two you've got to give up in the evening so you can do your comedy. You like do everything, so you're knackered, you want to go to bed, and then like you've then got to go and try and make people laugh for 6 minutes. But that's like a learning curve in itself, because now I know how to maybe to put a bit more effort in to the Sunday than I would a Thursday night or a Tuesday night, because I know I'm not going to be lacking motivation in the week.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm going to lack motivation on a Sunday. And I've worked out, the good thing about bombing is that you can just work out where you've gone wrong with something. Like, I done a gig on a Thursday, I think that was with you at Bungalow 8.
Oh yeah.
And I went up and I was trying to work on like crowd work, basically, and just get everyone to sort of cheer and blah blah blah. It's a joke, like you try and lull people into it, like cheering for you, and then you have a punchline on the end of it and they're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But no one was cheering. Like, people were just very much like, it's, you know, sort of gone past 10 o'clock and you're trying to make us cheer.
Mm.
And then because of that, it got a bit of a response, but it wasn't that great. But because of that, I sped through my opening lines, and then I've learned that my jokes aren't made to for me to speak quickly in.
Sure.
I've got to slow down, and that creates more of a, I guess, like maybe like a tension if you're watching it, or it creates, you know, I don't really know what it creates, but it just makes it a bit funnier if I say it slowly. It might just be what I'm asking and what I'm saying. It can sometimes sound a bit like, maybe a bit silly, and you don't appreciate that when it's spoken fast. But if I was to say it slowly, you appreciate what I'm saying is quite silly without actually being a joke.
I think more often than not, comedians, I mean, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who really speaks fast as a device for being funny, but lots of comedians just naturally are slow, not slow speakers, but are very clear and concise, and the clarity of their voice with anyone, well, the clarity of anyone's voice can often be lost if they do speak quickly.
Yeah.
And some comedians even use pauses and silence almost as like tools of suggestion, and then that's the funny bit. So I think with most humour, you know, speaking slowly is the best way to do it, especially because if you speak quickly and someone misses it, then, you know, you've lost them.
Yeah.
And the joke won't make sense. They don't understand what you're talking about.
But the flip side to that, which I've learned as well, is that if you speak too slowly, sometimes you're setting up a bigger punchline than what you have.
Oh, right, yeah, I see what you mean.
I've done it where I've left, like, a gap too long and people are waiting for a joke. But, like, I might have one joke where it's not built for everyone to laugh, but there's something inside it that might make one person laugh.
Mm.
And then I can work off of what they're laughing, and, like, they shouldn't technically laugh because of what the story's about. And then I can create, like, a joke off the back of that. Like, why would you laugh at that? But if I say that slowly, no one, it's not going to catch anyone off guard because they're expecting a bit of a punchline, and then I say it and no one laughs because it isn't a funny joke in itself. It's just like something that might reach out to like one person that found it funny.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, like setting yourself up for a big punchline and then just saying something that's not a big punchline at all.
Okay. So you went from someone who wanted to do comedy, but just, as you say, kind of bottled it for a while and put it off and put it off. What advice would you give to someone who's in that situation as you were then, wants to do it, but just can't bring themselves to, you know, shove themselves up on stage? What advice would you give to them?
Podcasts and articles on The Guardian and whatever else you get on Google don't help you at all.
Oh, they don't help you?
No.
Okay.
Like, I'm sure they are probably good for a long-term, like, if you're making a career out of it and there's, like, a long-term progression and you can listen to how people navigated certain bits, maybe, like, when they were trying to find an agent, if they need an agent. And, like, if you want to go up to Edinburgh and what you should do when you go up to Edinburgh. But, like, they don't help you at all when you want to do stand-up.
Mm.
And there's no, like, listening to a podcast hasn't changed what I've done on stage since I've started. The only times I've changed or improved something is because I listened back to what I'd done and I was like, oh, that was a bit shit, or that was actually quite good, I'll try and build on that and drop that. But like, you'll never know how good you are at it if you don't just give it a go, and then you can't improve on what you have if you haven't given it a go because you don't know where you're at. I probably procrastinated a lot on it. Like, listen to a lot of podcasts on comedians in their early days, and like, you Google like the tips they give you. I don't know, like, famous comedians will give tips on what you should do when you first start.
Mm.
But it's just like, just do it, and if you're shit, that's all right, because you're meant to be shit.
Yeah, no, I mean, very few people are any good in their first few months of comedy. That's not, sorry, that's kind of like lumping,
no, that's
you in,
right, mate.
Lumping
you, just,
you in,
you know, invite me over, stack me up on your podcast, it's all right.
No, but what I mean is, like,
I'm going to go do a gig tonight, so I'm sure you can come along.
Yeah.
And as well.
You're at Tabac tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm hoping it's good. It's been good weather, but I've got a feeling the long weekend might push people off from spending money, but I'm hoping not.
Yeah, perhaps. Good weather, I don't know, it tends to bring people out, because
yeah,
people want to go out to bars and that. It's rain people that puts people off, because they don't leave the house, because it's raining too much.
Yeah, but I won't know till I get there. But yeah, hopefully it'll be all right. I've got Tabac tonight, the Comedy Dojo tomorrow.
Mm.
Do
you have new material prepared for that?
I have some, not really prepared for it, but I've got new material I could probably go into. I've just got, when I write jokes, I generally like fill the page with a load of words that don't need to be said.
Okay.
Like I'll describe like really pointless things about a story that no one needs to hear, but for something in my mind says like that's a really specific part of the story they need to know. And so like I'll write everything down and I read it back, and then I just cut like paragraphs and sentences off and then just put it together, and then there's the joke. So I've got a lot of that that wouldn't be suitable to go up in front of people, and like I wouldn't need help anyone breaking those jokes down.
Okay.
And the only new ones I've had, I've done already. So yeah, I think they're gonna try and heckle us. I think that was, they're gonna try and focus on heckling. So I might just.
And again, just for the record, the Comedy Dojo is something that's really, really useful in Auckland, and something I haven't come across in other areas where I've performed comedy. It's basically a comedian's workshop where you can, it's a safe space to try new material, essentially. And also, if you want, receive feedback from other comedians and suggestions on how you could tweak it or things you could add. Or, of course, things you should take out. And, yeah, I think they do tend to have a bit of a theme each time they do it.
Yeah, I think it's monthly.
Yeah, and I think crowd interaction is going to be the theme this time, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, if you want to be heckled, then they will heckle you. So it'd be good, but it'll probably be like, I suppose it's almost like in like the military where like they get people trained up, but then pretending to be shot at is not the same as being shot at.
Yeah.
So like you'll get as much training as you can from it, but you won't have the same, like, if you're expecting someone to heckle you in like a safe space, as they put it, then you're not going to be that bothered by it.
Yeah.
But if you're doing 6 minutes and you're 3 minutes in and you're like, right, I'm coming up to a good joke, and then someone fucking puts you off, then you've got to like try and get over that like initial like rage that might come over, where you just want to ruin your set completely and just have a go at them.
I guess it's sort of like, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but it's kind of like training for penalties in the World Cup. There's nothing that you can do to recreate the same atmosphere as like a penalty shootout in a match. You can't take that and put that on the training field.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to recreate. And also, I don't think our fellow comedians would be too harsh on us.
No one's going to shout out,
"You fucking dickhead."
Yeah, unless you got them to get really personal, then.
I can't think of anyone on the Auckland scene that would be mean like that.
Yeah, no. To be honest, I wouldn't really have a problem with someone heckling. Like, I wouldn't have a problem responding as much. I might not have anything that funny to say, but like, I'm not too bothered with the actual interaction of someone's giving you shit, you give shit back. But getting over that like initial, someone's just interrupted me to be a dickhead.
Because
sometimes if like you're doing 6 minutes and it's you can only do this twice a week, you don't want to then spend like the next 3 minutes just arguing with someone. So you want to like overcome that urge and just try and like put it out a bit and then carry on with your jokes.
Mm.
That would be like the...
I'm not sure what I want to do, whether or not, because the good thing about the dojo is that you can sort of select your options before you get up, and if you don't want to be heckled, then you can say no heckling. I don't know, I've got new material that I want to try out, and that's another thing that annoys me, is when you've got new material that you want to try out at an open mic, and then you do end up doing crowd work, and you don't get to try out the stuff that you'd been like really excited to try. But yeah, I've got some new material that I want to try out that would be derailed by hecklers, so I don't know what I'm going to do yet.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for coming on for the second time. What I'm going to do now is end the recording and click save.
Yeah,
otherwise,
don't delete this one.
You'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
My girlfriend gets suspicious soon.
Yeah. You've been recording a lot of podcasts recently, Danny. What's going on? I better hear all these. When are they coming out? There you have it. That concludes the interview with Danny Field. What a great first guest to have on. Danny's just moved away from Auckland, currently travelling around New Zealand, having a lot of fun before going back to the UK. So yeah, real big loss to the Auckland scene. He's a very funny guy. I've enjoyed gigging with him and getting to know him very well over the last few months. Not the last we hear from Danny though, luckily. I've got an episode coming up in, maybe like two or three episodes time, where we'll be hearing a little bit more from Danny. So that's really great. Next episode, we have a titan of the Auckland comedy scene in the form of Josiah Day. He is such a funny guy. Super talented young chap, and we have a really great chat. For now, that's it. Thank you so much for listening.